Welcome to the Middle East Reports. We are your connection to truthful reporting on Israel and the Middle East. And every week we try to help you see things through a biblical lens with what's happening in that region. Because if you don't see things through a biblical lens in that region, you're going to have a very distorted view. So we try to do that every single week here on the Middle East Report. And I do appreciate you listening. We have got a great show for you today. A show that will help inform you on what's going on in Israel, current events, things happening there that you need to know. And I've got a special guest with me today directly from the land of Israel. He just happens to be in the United States, and I snagged him at a conference at the Israel Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. And his name is Ari Abramovitz. And Ari, you live in Israel, and not just live in Israel, but you live in the biblical heartland, I guess you might say, of Israel in Judea. Tell us a little bit about you, the Land of Israel organization that you're a part of there in Israel.
I was born in Texas, fourth generation Texan. And right after high school, came to Israel for what was supposed to be just a few months. But when you taste meaning and purpose and truth in your life, you can't exactly just roll it back and say, I'm going to go back into the matrix or whatever. So that's a long story about how I ended up staying in Israel. We could go later into that if you want to. But no, I live on the southeastern tip of settlement in Judea. I have three partners out there, and at the very beginning it was thorns and thistles, and now it really is a very, very beautiful. People don't say they say it shouldn't be called a farm because, yeah, we do have animals, but there's this beautiful ecological pool, one of the most beautiful I've ever seen. There's the an ancient looking house of prayer. You've been there? No. You have? Yes.
I have been there, and it is Arogot Farms. I think that's the name, right?
The Arogot Farm, yes. So, and it's also very critical. They sent us out there originally, because they said that these mountains were so important for the safety and security of southeastern Judea, and by extension for all of Judea and Samaria, and by extension for all of Israel, because without Judea and Samaria, which the world calls the West Bank, Israel is indefensible. You can't defend a country that's 9 miles wide. And so, and without Israel, the world is really... Israel is the tip of the spear in the battle of the global jihad against the entire non-Muslim world. And we're the tip of the spear in Israel. So in some sense, we're really the tip of the spear in the battle of our generation, or in the battle for civilization.
So you are there in the biblical heartland in Judea. And Judea, for people who may not even understand where in the world that is in Israel, they've never been to Israel. What are we talking about here? Biblical Judea, Samaria, and specifically again, where you all have this beautiful farm that you've developed, where you live. It's just absolutely beautiful. A prayer center as well.
When you're standing in our house of prayer, you can look south, southeast, and see the Dead Sea. You can see Masada. You can see the Jerusalem crystal clear. It helps you see how small Israel really is. It's the size of New Jersey, And so, when you actually see it with your own eyes, you can internalize. First of all, there's a certain holiness to the land itself. I used to really think that it was because King David wrote so many of the Psalms in these mountains, and so that's what made it so holy. But I actually have come to believe that there's an unholiness infused in the land itself from the days of creation. And that is what inspired King David to write the Psalms there. That you sort of have to be there to experience it. I always struggle in explaining it. But yeah, it's the heartland of Israel. It's where all of Jewish history played out. There's no people in the world that is more indigenous to a land than the Jewish people are to Judea.
But there's a lot of people who are not happy with the fact that you have built this beautiful place there in the heartland of Israel, and you have every right to do that as someone who lives in Israel, as an Israeli, and yet there's a lot of people who are not very happy that you have done that.
But when you dig deeper, I think everybody's perspective on almost every issue in the world, in their lives, the way they see the world, the fundamental prism through which they experience reality in their lives is built on their fundamental understanding of God, their faith. And so Europeans that have sort of a Catholic background and a replacement theology, they, of course, are going to be, they build this house of cards and explain very hypocritical, irrational reasons that a Jew can't live in Judea. It doesn't make any sense. They build these sort of illusions and facades like, oh, without Judea and Samaria, without the West Bank, that's the reason that the world hates Israel. And if Israel just gave it up, then we'd be at peace with the whole world. But it's, we got to give it, even though that's 1929, Haj Amin al-Husseini met with Hitler to destroy the Jewish people. Was that because of the settlements in the West Bank in Judea and Samaria in 1967? Right? It's in 1964, the PLO was established, the Palestinian Liberation Organization. Were they established to liberate the settlements of 1967? It didn't even exist yet. What do they want to do? The fundamental idea of Islam, what does Islam mean? Subjugation. To submit. To submit. And the world is divided up into Dar al-Harb and Dar al-Islam. The world of Islam, 23 Arab states, 57 Muslim states, and the world of the sword that has yet to be converted to Islam. And as, and that's still, they're the ultimate. The irony is whenever Israel is accused of a thing, you see what they're being accused of, and you can tell exactly the crimes of the those who are accusing them. So Islam, you know, what is Hamas and these protests accusing Israel of now? Genocide. The very people that have just committed the worst genocide since the Holocaust are accusing Israel of genocide when they have gone to greater lengths to prevent civilian casualties, which, by the way, I don't actually really believe that there's maybe a handful of civilians actually in Gaza. That's what the poll showed. That's what the video showed. Children, elderly, going in and burning babies in front of their mothers. And just horrific. It's an entire people that is in a death cult of psychosis. So, but anyways, Israel goes to greater length than any country ever, and we're accused of genocide. So there is an intolerance of Jews living in Judea, and it comes from replacement theology, it comes from the jihad, and that's really what it's about. And we just have to be able to say, okay, so the whole world is against us. That's okay. As long as we know that in our hearts we're acting with integrity and justice, and the God of Israel is with us.
Now, you mentioned genocide, and you mentioned protests and things happening across the country, the United States. You think about what's happening on our college campuses. So I want to throw a word at you, and I want to talk about this. What you're hearing on college campuses is free Palestine. Okay, so we're going to talk about Palestine, what that so-called name is, but and I want to ask you, what does it mean to have a free Palestine? What has it meant for the people in Gaza prior to Israel taking care of Hamas there, and maybe, you know, other places in the world like Iran? Free Palestine. I think that's what they're inferring to. What does it look like?
So I'll start. That question is for the rest of the show, and then we're done. That's a big question. But let's just start with the word Palestine and Palestinians. I have been on my own personal crusade that sometimes I feel like I'm alone. That I talk to some of my friends, even religious right-wing friends, and they talk about the situation. They say, you know, the Palestinians need to be the Palestinians. And I say, why are you using the word Palestinian? I don't understand. And they say, well, you know, I know that there's really no such thing as a Palestinian, and there's no such thing as Palestine, right? Because before Israel became Israel in 1948, it was British Imperial Palestine. There wasn't never an Arab, independent Arab Muslim country called Palestine. Never happened. It never was a thing. So where did this come from? This fictitious idea. Even Yasser Arafat, the head of the PLO, he was born in Egypt. He was Egyptian. How is he the head of the Palestinian Liberation Organization when he was born in Egypt? What is this fiction and this lie? You know, in America, a lot of people are like, well, I identify as a woman, and please, you have to call me she and her. And it's like, okay, I mean, if we're going to tell the truth, that it's a mental disorder, right, transgenderism. But, like, it's really no sweat off my back to, if someone asks me politely, okay, I'll call her or him or whatever. But if someone comes to me and says, I identify as Shayna, my wife Shayna, I identify as Shayna's husband, I'm going to punch him out, right? Because now you're already negating my identity. When we say the word Palestinian, the very idea of Palestine is created in order to negate the identity of the state of Israel. So I don't know why we do that. I don't know why there's people on my side and they say, well, you know, if you want to be taken seriously in the dialogue of the world and not marginalized, then you need to be able to say that word. And I'm like, no, so don't take me seriously. I'm not going to speak falsehood. I'm not going to speak lies. There's no such thing as a Palestinian. And my very uttering of that word is already throwing up the white flag in the very battle I'm claiming to fight. So a lot of this is really about truth against falsehood, good against evil. And it's hard. It's hard to, because a lot of people, when we say, well, the God of Israel has given us the land of Israel, they say, well, that's what they say, that Allah gave them the land. I'm like, okay, but they're wrong. They're wrong, and I'm right. And it's okay to realize that there is a, just because someone says a thing, that doesn't give it legitimacy or truth. I don't even care if they're the vast majority of the world. I don't even care if they're the rest of the world. Right? Abraham was an Ivri, a Hebrew. Was Ivri mean ever? Once the other side, he was on the other side. The whole world, every single person other than him, was worshiping stones and trees and idols. And he said, no, that's a lie, and there's one God in the world. And he radically changed the entire trajectory of mankind, and he became the Abraham, the father of Judaism, Christianity. And by the way, a lot of other Far Eastern faiths, with the wisdom of Abraham came to them also.
Before Israel came into Gaza to take care of Hamas, how free were the Arabs there in Gaza?
In 67, when Israel went down to Gaza, the Arab sheikhs laughed at them there because they were empty, barren sand dunes. They said, nobody can do anything here. And within a number of years, 60% of Israel's hydroponic organic exports were sent out of Gaza. They literally made the desert blossom. And then when it was ethnically cleansed of Jews, because when they say Israel ethnically cleanses, that's actually true, but only of their own Jews. That's the only time, meaning in Israel, we have 2 million Arab citizens. Yet we're talking about this Palestinian state, and you know what that means. According to the world, if there's a Palestinian state, that means that they're going to forcefully evict and destroy the homes of hundreds of thousands of Jews, because in this Palestinian state, there can't be a Jew living there. But why is it that in Israel, we have millions of Arab citizens, right? So when Israel unilaterally gave Gaza to the Palestinian Authority in 2005, I was personally carried out. There's videos online of me being carried out of Gaza. And they said, now it'll be a Singapore, and we'll be able to have peace. And if they shoot even one missile from there, oh, they're going to get it. And what did it become? It became Hamastan. It became the absolute cradle of jihad, of a vicious, violent, murderous, genocidal jihad. Whenever Israel retreats and gives land in the very Western, ridiculous, suicidal surrender of their land to jihadists, and they think that that's going to bring peace, all it does is give them greater, greater hope that their global jihad is having tremendous success.
Is the goal of Islam just to destroy, you know, the Jewish people, or do they have their sights set on people who just love the Bible, Christians and Jews together?
I don't know if I would say destroy the Jewish people. I would say to dominate. The goal of Islam is to dominate, and it's not just Jews and Christians. Every non-Muslim, that's why they go to India, and there's Hindu temples, and they say, oh, they make up something. Oh, this is where Muhammad's horse stopped to change his hoof or whatever. And so there has to be a mosque exactly on where that temple is. They go to every other nation, every other people's holy spots, and build a mosque either right on top of it or right next to it, towering over it. That is what Islam is. It's global domination. The reason I think they have their sights on Israel right now more than anyone else is because it went from being the Middle East, which was pretty much under Arab Muslim rule, and now there's this little tiny country of an autonomous Jewish state. And the existence of that country, even if it's one city block in downtown Tel Aviv, the existence of an autonomous Jewish state that's not under Muslim rule means that Islam is not the ultimate religion and Allah is not the ultimate God. When people are like, oh, the political independence of the occupation, it's all a smokescreen facade of making, of politicizing what is really, truly a spiritual religious war.
So a spiritual religious war that's going on completely against God's word. Is it, it's everything that you just said, but is it more that we've just rejected the word of God? I mean, here in the country of the United States, even within evangelical circles, even within people who, you know, love the Bible, we've twisted things when it comes to Israel and the Jewish people and tried to create something that the Bible really doesn't say. So I'm wondering if, you know, when we look at what's happening, you know, in the world today, is it the fact that we've just rejected the word of God when it comes to the covenant and the purposes and the plans that God has for the Jewish people?
Well, I think what's happening, yeah, I think that a lot of what's happening you see in America is an absolute rebellion and rejection of all things holy. And they say in the Torah that God's seal is truth. It says a number of places, thou shalt not lie. Why is it good not to lie? Because when you lie, you're trying to manipulate reality into what you think it should look like and should be. Whereas when you tell the truth, you are at in synchronicity and in the in the divine frequency of saying, this is the way the world is, this is what God, the position he put me in, and I'm going to tell the truth. And when you do, you allow him to be in the steering wheel of your life and of your nation and of your people. And so right now in America, they're rejecting all truth. A man is a woman is a man. A little 8-year-old boy says, oh, I want to dress up as a princess. Next thing you know, he's being genitally mutilated in the hospital. It's such, and so what happens is when you reject God, God says, okay, I'm stepping out. I'm going to step out of this picture. Let's see how this looks for you. And what I see happening in America is exactly that. I feel like I'm watching the rapid free fall deterioration of what was once a nation under God, which is now a nation more and more without God. And it terrifies me to see that. And when I'm here in Nashville, it gives me hope. It gives me hope because I just see people of, you can even see a person if they're with God or not without knowing much about them. Just from the look on their face, just from whether they smile when they look at you, just from whether there's a decent politeness. And I just see in Nashville, I haven't left Israel for years and I probably won't leave for a long time again, but I just felt a real decency here, a real godliness in the people here. And so it makes me feel in some levels that there's two Americas, and that's a dangerous place for a nation to be.
Yeah, you look at what's happening in some of the liberal states here in the United States, and then you take a look at what's happening in the southern part of the country, as you just described in Nashville, Tennessee, where we are right now. It's like two different worlds that are happening right now. So I want to talk about some of the current events that are happening, you know, in Israel. You all are facing a multi-front war, you know, in so many different places. How is Israel going to achieve victory in all these places? You got Hezbollah in the north. You have what's going on in Gaza with Hamas. You've got things going on in Judea and Samaria with terrorists trying to do horrible things to the Jewish people there. So how is Israel going to get out of this war and achieve complete victory?
The more Israel feels in our hearts that we have no hope and no chance to rationally win a war, when we say, because it's weird how they say Israel is the mighty superpower. Do you see who we're surrounded by? I mean, Egypt's Air Force, Egypt alone, is twice the size of Israel's Air Force. You know, we're surrounded by Hezbollah, Hamas, the Islamic Jihad, the Iran, Syria. We're just this one tiny country dwarfed and surrounded by all of these nations. And meanwhile, Europe is now, saying Palestine is a state, meaning that they can now have weapons shipped to them. It's as if the world is trying to either destroy Israel or to collude in the destruction of Israel. And that's actually, in my mind, I know it sounds crazy, but that's the best place for Israel to be. Because when we look to the north and to the south and to the east and to the west and to our old ally America, we could always put our faith in, and we see that there's no one with us, then our hearts have no choice but to turn to God and say, God, without you, we have no hope. And that's what this whole story is about. That's what this whole story is about, for the nation of Israel to be a reflection of the God of Israel. And that can only be when we have our idols and our vanities and our illusions shattered and destroyed before us. And so we have to be willing to act with courage and character and clarity. And so when America and Europe have these hypocritical accusations of, you know, we only need American weapons if we're going to continue to fight this war to lose it. But if we're willing to fight to win it, then we can say, America, we don't need your weapons. First of all, we should have never taken foreign aid from America. Never, never. If America had the clarity to recognize that Israel is the tip of the spear in the battle against the global jihad, and Israel fighting that war is a gift to American soldiers who now don't have to fight it, and America wants to send Israel weapons as a military expenditure, fine. It's a military expenditure that America understands for their own military. This is part of the advancement of their own military, and that's how they want to support Israel with those weapons, fine. But it's not foreign aid. It's not foreign aid because all of the foreign aid has been a curse to Israel. A curse. Meaning even when people say, well, what about the Iron Dome? The Iron Dome, you know, if for people that don't know what the Iron Dome is, it's this technology where the jihad in, let's say, Gaza shoots missiles that are maybe $1,000 a piece. And we shoot $150,000 missiles. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it's an insane amount of money compared to the price of their little missiles that they're shooting at us. And we intercept them in the sky, right over. So that's why it's called the Iron Dome. I've always thought that that's a curse. Why? Because it just moves the threshold of what we're willing to tolerate. Any normal country, when you have missiles being lobbed at you, you devastate the other country and you say, never do that again. But now we've just moved the threshold and we're able to shoot them out of the sky right over us. Right? If we didn't have that, if they were shooting missiles at us and we didn't have the Iron Dome and they start landing on kindergartens in Ashkelon and Ashdod, then we have no choice but to absolutely eviscerate the entire area. And if they say there's disproportionate civilian deaths, well, don't do it again then. That's what you get for playing stupid games. Don't do it. Where's the? How is that a hard thing to say? You know, I remember they were constantly accusing Israeli spokesmen, 30,000 innocent civilians dead, and all the Israeli spokesmen are saying that's not true. The numbers are inflated by Hamas, which, by the way, it's true what they're saying. But what I would say is, I would say the numbers aren't true. But if they were, I think they should be more. Because that's what you get for cooking babies and raping mothers and beheading children. If you want to do that, then you're going to be blasted and it's going to be severely disproportionate, insanely disproportionate, and never do it again. Because that's the only language that they speak in the Middle East, the language of strength. So to me, it's not a hard question.
Iran shot over 600 missiles and drones toward Israel, and yet Israel was protected. Are you seeing, you know, once again, the protection of God over Israel?
So what happens is in Israel, we're so spoiled with miracles constantly. Constantly. The very existence of Israel every single day is a miracle. That we're surrounded by 23 Arab states, 57 Muslim states that want to wipe us out, and we exist every single day, despite the fact that the Jewish people seem to be lacking the most basic survival instincts of any country. Right, of any people throughout history, and yet we've survived longer than anyone else. And statistically, the Iranian missiles coming in and not one casualty is a miracle. But when you have miracle after miracle after miracle, the miracles become nature. So it's just signs after signs after signs. And if you want to, you could stick your head in the sand, say coincidence, random, happenstance, everything. Or you can say, wow, the God of Israel is truly protecting us. Everything that's happening is happening as exactly as it's supposed to. Even the nations of the world, what we see happening right now, Ireland and Norway and Spain and recognizing the Palestinian state, which what does that mean? It's dividing the land of Israel. They're dividing the land of Israel. But what do we see? If you actually open the book of the prophets and the Bible and the prophets, it's crazy that these impossible prophecies that would have never been, nobody would ever put out a prophecy that is so unlikely to happen. It's like one in a million. Why? Because the entire veracity of your prophecies are lost and gone if even one of your prophecies is exposed to be false. So never before in history has there been a nation that's been exiled and survived as that nation that was exiled. Never before. Let alone the prophets say, and throughout the Torah, throughout the Bible, I don't think there's a greater, more prominent prophecy than the ingathering of the exiles. And it's happened, and it's happening. Back to the land 2,000 years ago, we were exiled from. Exactly as the prophet said, and they say that when you return, your ancient language will then be revived. So we're being ingathered. Exactly what the prophet said, the language will be revived. And then a number of times it says that when you return, the nations will seek to divide your land. And I will judge them there for dividing your land. Right? And so this is all happening exactly as the prophet said. And so that to me is maybe in some way a part of the reason the prophets even said it, because these times are so unstable and so scary that when you see the words of the prophets, you're like, oh, God is with us. This is under control. Things are playing out exactly as they need to.
I want to ask everybody who's listening today to the Middle East Report to please pray for, you know, the situation that's going on there in Israel. Hold the word of God up high. Understand what the word of God says about the plans and purposes that God has for the Jewish people in the land of Israel. And what would you say to them that love the Jewish people, love the land of Israel? You know, how can they pray? How can they practically help? What can they do? I mean, so much going on right now.
God doesn't need our weapons and our biceps. He needs our hearts. He needs our obedience. He needs our love. And so the situation that I'm in, I always try to think, what can I do to bring light and to bring love and to bring compassion? And work on my own faith, you know? And so I think there are people in this country that look at who's around you, your immediate surroundings, and just try to love them and to share with them about Israel and about truth and about moral clarity. And don't worry about sounding preachy. These kids in college, they need it. They want it. The prophet Amos says that there will be a hunger in the land, and the hunger will not be for bread, and the thirst will not be for water, but to hear the words of God. And people are too afraid. They want to be friends with their kids, and they want to just be friends and to be loved, and they're too afraid, and they don't understand that there is an actual famine on these college campuses. And when we're allowing that void to be filled by China and by atheist professors, it looks like transgenderism and Free Palestine protests. And we need to bring the Bible back in to their hearts, into our hearts. And that is the only hope that America has right now. That's the only hope the world has.
Ari, thank you for all that you do. I want to encourage you to visit Ari's website, thelandofisrael.com, thelandofisrael.com. You're going to find a lot of great information there for you and your family. Check it out, thelandofisrael.com, thelandofisrael.com. That's the Middle East Reports. I'm John Riley. Thank you for listening. Podcasts of the show are available everywhere where you get your podcasts.